All right, thank you for that, crisscross applesauce. Welcome back to the show. Rick Tittle with you, coast to coast, around the world on AFN. And as I mentioned, Tuesday, first hour, we check in with the co-host of the SalesportTalk.com segment, Karen Lyle. And Karen, we're going to be joined by our friend Christopher Kane in just a minute. But 45 days, 9 hours, 33 minutes, and 33 seconds until the America's Cup begins. Can you wait that long?
Well, you know, we have, I might be there. It's possible. So we'll see. Things that we're just waiting. But we've got to talk about the Prada Cup that just happened, because the American Magic team boat capsized in the middle of the third race. It was very dramatic. And it almost sank.
Yeah, the American Magic, by the way, I'm looking at the results. I saw a DNF, and as we know in sports, that means did not finish. But in this Prada Cup, the Ineos team, which is, of course, from the United Kingdom, they have 4 wins, 0 losses. The Lunarossa Prada Pirelli team, which is, of course, from Italia, they have 2 wins and 2 losses. And here's our New York Yacht Club American Magic, 0-4 and almost sank. What does this mean for our chances, Karen?
Well, actually, just to give you a little bit of the story. So, as you remember, when Christopher and I and you were talking last time about the last races prior to this in the America's Cup series, Ineos had a 0 wins. They didn't do anything in winning any of the races. And American Magic was the second in contending against the defender of the cup, which meant that they were the hopeful for how things were coming along. So in this particular, in the Prada Cup that just started last week, the Ineos team really came up, and they were winning the first two races. Now, in this last one, the way these matches work is that there's two boats matching against each other each time, and they total points. And there's a series of races over a period of 4 weeks that we're in the middle of right now in Auckland, New Zealand. And so what happened was, in the race between the Lunarossa Prada team, the Lunarossa Italian boat and the American Magic American boat, the Americans were ahead. And as they were rounding a mark, which is going around the corner, there was a gust of wind that went from about 18 knots to 24 knots in 3 seconds. And they were maxed out on their travel, and I can explain that in a minute. And the boat lifted up out of the air with the wind, and then basically crashed down on its side and capsized, which means that the mast fell into the water. And then that was just the beginning of the story.
Let's bring in our friend Christopher Kane, our America's Cup aficionado. And Christopher, before we get into why American Magic isn't that magical so far, and remember, I am the neophyte here. Is this Prada Club Cup that's going on, is this the qualifying tournament to see who will get to race against New Zealand, or is this just a preliminary warm-up cup?
This is it. We're out of preseason. So, you know, again, as we've mentioned on shows past, the setup for the America's Cup is a little strange. New Zealand, as the defender, is already into the Super Bowl, if you will. They're already into the final set of races, and everyone else has to go through postseason. So that's what we're seeing right now, is we're seeing Prada and American Magic and the British fight for who is going to challenge New Zealand. So this is the real. And I know it was depressing to watch the American boat go over and then almost sink. But it's important to point out, too, that they're going to benefit from the fact that there aren't other syndicates. So originally there were supposed to be 5, possibly 6 syndicates challenging for the America's Cup, and we're down to 3. But they wrote the rules when they were expecting it to be 5, possibly 6. So the way the finals work is, at the end of this series, so there's 2 more series after this series. After this series, the top boat goes into the Prada Cup final, and the second and third boat fight it out for who is going to challenge that top boat. So they'll fight it out, and then the winner of that will go against the winner of the Prada Cup, and the winner of that will go into the America's Cup. Now, that means that since, according to that machinery, three boats will make it into the next series, and there only are three boats, America is going to go through to the next series. And you know, in America's Cup pass, what they've done is they've had sort of rolling point scores where you carry points over from one series to the next. And as a result, you had boats that came on strong late but were in such a deficit from lack of points from the earlier races that they couldn't catch up. That is not the case here. So as much as this was horrible and as much as American Magic has already decided they're going to miss the next set of races this weekend, it doesn't matter. They're into the next series because there's only three syndicates.
Okay, well then, how boneheaded is it to let this happen, as Karen said? Is this something where it's humiliating, or is it just the way these ships are designed now, they get airborne, and this just shows that you know, it's just one of those things? Or is this a humiliation, and we might as well stay home right now?
It's a combination of both. I mean, Karen and I said before this started, if you go back to the show we did before the Prada Cup started, we said that one of these boats is going to crash. We saw it coming. These are brand new boats. And again, as we say, not just brand new boats to the America's Cup, brand new boats, period. No one has ever sailed these boats before. So the idea we're going to get to the Prada Cup without a crash, it wasn't going to happen. Unfortunately, it happened to us. That being said, there are a lot of questions being thrown around. And as Karen pointed out earlier, they were going around the second to last turning point in the course. So they were going around and heading up to the finals. They were heading to the finish line. And the winds had been puffy all day long. And they did one of the most difficult maneuvers there is to do in sailing. And a lot of questions are, why did you do that going into the last leg of a race where you had a 600-meter lead? Why did you go for that complicated of a maneuver? It's a maneuver that you only do if you're behind. It's a Hail Mary. We talk about if you're the boat behind the lead boat, you don't want to keep following them around the course. You want to split the course. You want to go in an opposite direction, hope you get different wind. You do things like that maneuver to force a split when you're behind. It's a very tough maneuver to do in the best case scenario. And why you do it with that big of a lead, I don't know. And that is a question a lot of people have had is, you know, I hate to bring back San Francisco again, as we seem to do, but let's point out this was Dean Barker versus Jimmy Spithill. Jimmy Spithill in San Francisco was driving the American boat. Dean Barker was driving the Kiwi boat. And Jimmy Spithill came back and did one of the greatest comebacks in sports history. And it just feels like every time Dean Barker races Jimmy, regardless of what boat he's in, he does something silly, like he's got to make up for San Francisco. I think if it had been the British boat, maybe they don't do it. It just felt like Dean Barker trying to make a point because it was a needlessly complicated maneuver.
You know, Christopher, I feel as though that this is something, when you have a new design like this too, I mean, of course the racers are going to push it to the max. And I don't look at American Magic and say, oh, this was a terrible, terrible thing they did. I mean, they were actually just right there, just sailing right against it. But they didn't really, you know, there was no room for error.
Right.
That was the problem.
That's the problem. And why do you do a maneuver that you're cutting it that close when you have that much of a lead?
Well, I listened to what Terry had to say about the whole incident and how, you know, how they've analyzed and looked at the film and, you know, just kind of looking at all the different issues. I'm not sure that there's a complete consensus on why the boat capsized, except for that if it lands, I mean, when it lifts up in the air like that, because it just took flight, and it crashed back to the water, if it had landed on its bottom instead of on its side, they would have been able to recover and get out of it. But because it landed on its side, which is much weaker, it's not strengthened in the same way that the bottom is. I mean, it actually ended up with a huge hole. And then what we had after that was water coming in, the boat almost sinking to the bottom, which we can, I realize we're close to the end of our time here, but we can talk more about that in our next segment.
Yeah. And we can talk about the Kiwis who were amazing.
Yeah, and just, we got about 20 seconds here, Christopher. What is the bilge pump situation, or is that too much weight and they don't have that?
Yeah, they have to bring those in and put those on the boat because, you know, during normal racing, you're going to bring in a little water, but not to the Karen's point, not to the level of water that hole was bringing in. And when we come back from commercial break, we'll talk about the Kiwis because the reality is they saved the day.
Does anybody ever say, sit down, you're rocking the boat? Does anybody ever sing that?
Not if you want to get back on the boat.
All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come on back on Sports Byline. Rick Tittle, Christopher Kane, and of course, Karen Lyle, a little more salesporttalk.com about the America's Cup. Come on back.
This is Karen Lyle of Sailsport Talk, and we are following the sailors of the Vandeglobe. Charlie Dallin is still in the lead.
Hello, it's Charlie. I'm happy I managed to get 150 miles on Yannick in 3 days. I'm really happy to have taken the lead. The cold front, a semi-permanent cold front, extending from Cabo Frio to the southeast, played the major role on this, and it's still playing a role. To me, I've been through the front, and now I'm in a very unstable area of wind, and it will stay unstable for the next 24 hours. So even though I have a small lead on the others, I think we'll be able to really know who's done the best work, who's done the best job in 24 hours. So it's going to be a long day of work, of sail trimming and working on boat speed and angles to reach the stable wind area the fastest. I knew I was going to catch on Yannick, but I didn't know I would catch this much. So it's a good news. But once again, it's not over. Really see who's standing, what the standings are in 24 hours.
Miranda Marin just passed Cape Horn, and this was her report just as she was approaching.
I'm in a northwesterly airflow. I have just under 800 miles to go to Cape Horn, and it's a little bit difficult to know what sails put up, because the breeze is building and there's no point breaking anything now. So I'm being a little bit conservative, and it's going to get windier for a while before it gets much, the wind goes into the west and then gets quite light. It'll be quite nice. For now, it looks like we'll be going quite close to Cape Horn, but that could change. And it's been extremely cold. It's been really cold the last 3 days. It's the coldest I've been this whole race. I'm not cold myself because I'm well dressed, but every time I maneuver on deck, every time I'm on deck, my hands are frozen, and you have that, under your nails pain when your hands warm up again. And I could wear gloves, but it's difficult to handle rope and tie knots and things with gloves on, so I don't. But anyway, all is well. I'm sure it's the same Cape Horn as it was 19 years ago when I sailed past it on Amer Sports 2 with the crew of Amer Sports 2 in the Volvo Ocean Race. But it's something I haven't allowed myself to think about it at all until yesterday, really, because it's such a huge section and such a huge objective in this race. And until you're quite close to it, until you start actually having to look at the strategy to get to it, I just didn't allow myself to think about it at all. So I'm really looking forward to seeing it, actually. 778 miles to go and counting.
Yes, a little yacht rock there, and normally sailing does take you away from all your problems, but sometimes it is your problem when you're doing everything you can to win the best and biggest race on the planet, the America's Cup. We're talking about it again for a second segment here on Sports Byline and American Forces Radio Network. Rick Tittle with you, as always, with my co-host for this segment, Karen Lyle, the Piano Finders Call-in line is 800-878-PLAY, 800-878-7529. And joining us is our friend Christopher Kane in studio again for another segment. Karen, you alluded to the fact when you were describing the crash of America's Magic, when it did capsize and the mast went in the water, you said they were doing something to the something, and you would explain more about that later. What was the thing you were alluding to?
Well, basically, you know, it's a monohull, so if it landed on its bottom, they could have recovered and come out of it. But because it landed on its side, it actually started to take on water. And when I saw it lifted out of the out of the water after they rescued it and everything, I could see there was a big gaping hole on the side. And so what happened is that Terry Hutchinson, who's the captain, was talking about how he, everybody strapped in. And he started to realize that the boat was sinking. Then he's trying to get a knife and cut himself out, and then a couple of other sailors started to come and cut him out too. And so the first priority was for every sailor who strapped in to get out of it so they wouldn't drown. And this rescue effort, became a huge deal over a period of hours. There were members of the other teams who came and helped. There was the Coast Guard, the fire, the fire department, the rescue boats, the committee boats, and when you look at the footage, you see all these boats surrounding, and the crew, once they were out safely, were trying to save the boat from going to the bottom. And so they were, taking the bilge pumps, which they bring in from the side, to pump the water out at the same time as trying to put inflatable, put inflatable things around the bow to keep it up.
And I think Christopher, as you look at pictures top down, it's and you talk about how these are new boats. I don't know if I've ever seen with all three of the Challengers right now, it's basically two rows on each side. It looks like about four or five guys, almost like they're Viking rowers. I didn't even realize they were strapped in. I mean, long gone are the days where you're switching sides back and forth. Is this the first time where these guys don't switch sides and they're belted in?
Yeah, that was one of the first. This is the first time they've really done that. And to your point, in America's Cup boats past, even the catamarans, you had the crew run from one side to the other when the boat changed direction. And part of the reason they've done this for this is, as we've spoken about this in shows past, that what we would consider the boat hull isn't really what makes the boat go through the water. It's the foils. And that hull is more an aerodynamic surface than it is something that you have to optimize for going through the water. And as a result, you want as little things sticking out and blocking the wind and making that boat hull, and I even put exclamation points around that, more efficient going through the air. And of course, having a bunch of guys standing up is blocking the wind. So you want those guys all over. And yeah, they've optimized the way they generate power for the boats, where you can keep those guys at their stations on both sides of the boat. And because these boats ride on these foils, they don't lean over the way that traditional boats do. So you don't have to worry about the sailors on one side being right up against the water. So those combination of effects, yeah, this is the first time we've ever done that. But looking at that rescue effort, I mean, I just want to do a quick shout out to the New Zealand Syndicate, who, as often happens when two boats are racing, the other syndicates are on the water watching, trying to get ideas for where is it fast, where is it slow, where are they weak, what are they doing differently? And Prada was still racing, so their boats didn't get over as quickly. But the second they realized they were in trouble, the Kiwis were on station almost immediately. And if you look at those pictures of them rescuing, trying to save the boat from going down, all those boats with the orange and gray colors on them, those are all New Zealand boats, the Syndicate. And they didn't just send their staff over and their support people. The actual members of the boat, the Kiwi boat, were helping with the rescue. Peter Burling, who's the skipper, was helping get the sails off the boat so they could get that weight away from the boat while they were trying to save it. There's pictures of him actually, helping pull the sails off the American boats. So, as much as we like to beat on each other in sailing, at the end of the day, we're all humans out in the middle of the ocean in a very vulnerable position. And when things go sideways, it's kind of the rule of the sea. Everybody runs to help, regardless of whether you're racing or not.
Yeah, and Karen, the one thing that I didn't realize about these boats too is that I've watched the video a few times of the it looked like at one point they have escaped it, and then once they landed it, they still tipped over. And I noticed the Italian boat took a much larger turn, a wider turn than the Americans did. But so slow and steady wins the race, so to speak. But what I didn't realize is that these foils on the side can be lifted up out of the water and then placed back in. I thought they were rigid attached. So is that a new thing, that you can move the foils around?
So this started with the catamarans in San Francisco, where they would change directions. They would drop the foil down on one side and pull it up on the other. Because the foils are opposite the force of the sails, you only need them on one side. But that means, of course, that when you switch directions and the wind's now on the other side, you have to drop down the other foil and pull it up. So they're doing the same thing on these boats, where they will drop the foil down, execute the turn, and then pull up the other foil when they're done with the turn. And you know, if you look at the American boat during that turn right before, at one point they have both foils in the water because they're executing a maneuver where you go around the mark and then you turn again immediately. So they had both foils down for a long time, and then when they popped up the old foil, if you will, that's when things went sideways very quickly. But yeah, they that's what those grinders, that's what those guys leaning over are doing. They're on these pedestals that they grind, and they spin the handles. And what that does is that builds up hydraulic pressure in the boat, and then they use that pressure to drop and raise the foils.
Literally went sideways, yes. And Karen, for you, is this something that is any sort of design flaw, or is it these boats are so new that it's almost like we're finding out as we race what the limits of these craft can be?
It's the latter, you know, that's what I would say, because basically the thing about this race that's different from other races is that the boat keeps changing as the race continues. So everybody's learning. So it's a brand new design. It's where America's Cup over the century plus has been something that has led the way in boat design and influenced the whole industry of building boats. And so, you know, they're pushing the limits. This is the first time this has been done before. When I was listening to Terry's response in our press conference, basically he said that there was a certain point where they lost control of the rudder. And so that what the rudder is it's what causes the boat to go one direction or the other, in addition to how the sail is. It's an important steering factor. And so when the rudder came out of the water, then the boat is flying. It became an airplane. And it's a little bit of an airplane anyway to start with. And so then it was just, how do you land it? And it was the fact that it landed on its side that caused them not to be able to recover. And Christopher also mentioned that the New Zealand team came, but I have to mention all of the teams came afterwards. So everywhere, all of the racers, everybody was helping in every way they could, because, you know, if you invest so much of your life in your whole design team and everything in building a boat like this and racing it and learning how to sail it, there is no sailor on the water whose heart doesn't go out for a boat that's starting to sink. Yeah. You know, everybody comes to the rescue.
So, Christopher, let's say you're the New Zealand team, the Emirates team, and you're watching all this. Is that sort of, I mean, like we talked before about scouting reports, but is that something where they look at the American boat and they say, well, we would never do that? Or does that raise an alarm bell where you say, well, ours is the similar, we have to make sure we don't do that?
Well, yeah, I agree with Karen. I think this was more about boat control and the boat itself. I don't think there's anything inherently wrong in the design of American Matchfree that caused this to happen. So from that point, but I also think, you know, you learn over time, you know, where the edges are on these boats. And the weird thing about these boats is because they are foiling boats, weirdly, they are more stable the faster they go. So you want to be sailing these things flat out, but that means you're always sailing these things right at the edge. And because these are new boats, sometimes you go over the edge and you don't realize it. So yes, I think they're definitely going to be looking at these conditions and going, okay, maybe we need to readjust, you know, what we do in certain conditions or what we do at certain marks. You know, the wind behaves differently when you're turning around at the top of the course and the bottom of the course. The boat loads up differently. So maybe that's a maneuver you can pull off at the top of the course, but you probably want to, you know, take that out of the playbook for the bottom of the course. So, yeah, I think absolutely every team is learning continually. I mean, to think that they've got the playbook locked on these boats yet, they don't. And I don't know if they even will have it fully figured out by the end of the Cup. It's a brand new boat. It doesn't look like or perform like any other boat. They're fun when they're going full tilt, but boy, they can go sideways in a hurry because you've got to race these things flat out. It's like they say in football, the easiest way to get injured is not to play every play 100%.
And Karen, time for one more question. I know you said that maybe there's a chance you can get a green light to go to New Zealand. And I have seen some of the pictures of the racing fans out there. I know at Cal for football, Strawberry Canyon, there's a place called Tightwad Hill where you can kind of look in for free. There is a place there that I guess they call the North Head.
Yep.
It's this grassy little outcropping there that looks down on the water. It's a beautiful view of the skyline, too, of Auckland. Is that something where you're going to sit on the North Head, or are you going to get some credentials and
I'm actually already credentialed. I've been invited by Prada, the Accreditation Center, to be there. And all I'm waiting for is the emergency permission from New Zealand to come into the country. But basically, I would have a desk in the media center for the media and be there at the press releases and be on the press boat on the water.
That's fantastic. You got to make that happen.
We'll see. You know, we'll see.
Can you get Chris on the boat?
Plus, I'm sure you got to get that swag from Prada too, there, Karen. That's not bad either.
All right, great stuff,
yeah.
Christopher Kane, in
swag,
studio.
Right?
Good to hear from you again, Karen Lyle. As always, SailsportTalk.com. Check out the website, the QR code there as well. Lots of pictures and information. Thanks to both of you, and we'll do it again next week.
Thanks, Rick.
Bye-bye.
All right, I'm Rick Tittle. We'll take a quick break. Come on back on Sports Byline as the lines are open. 1-800-878-PLAY.